You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Clock, thank you so much for staying with us. It is the Friday edition of the UCBS McKaiser Show. And of course, for the next hour, we move on to politics. And in fact, I didn't tell you what's going to happen this hour. We simply got into that nostalgic trip with John Robbie in the last hour. Well, this hour, you're also in for another trip and a really interesting one. The Democratic Alliance, as I've said many a times before, is critical to the health of our democracy because we need competitive politics in order to make sure that our country does as well as possible. And if you have effective one-party dominance in a democracy, that is not good for the health of your society and for your democratic system. And the implication of that is the leadership race going on inside the official opposition currently matters regardless of how you feel about the DA. If you are a Democrat vested in politics that is competitive, which I suggest we should all be, then you should be taking a keen interest in the battle to lead the DA. And a couple of folks have put their names in the hat. And one of them is Mbali Ntuli. And she has generously agreed to come on my show. I've given all of the candidates an opportunity to come on the show. You've heard John Moody before. We did an interview with him a week or two back. She has come for the interview in studio today. And I've extended the same invitation to John Steenhuisen as well. He has yet to respond, so hopefully he will accept as well. But Mbali hangs out with us this hour. You can call in. She's open to engage you on anything unscripted. And let's get to know her thinking on key political issues of the day, and also who she is, where she comes from, and what the hell a talented young black South African woman is doing in politics when she could be doing so many other things, when there's so many disincentives for her generation to get your hands dirty. Or maybe it's precisely because things are a hot mess that one should be getting involved. I don't know. She can tell her own story. But the lines are going to be open throughout. Mbali, good morning, and thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much for having me, and good morning to all your listeners.
Man, I wish I had 2 hours. I've got a million and one questions for you. I think we should start not in the first instance with your personal story, which I think is fascinating, and where you come from and biography. But let's get straight into the party first. And then a little bit later, I want to understand who is Mbali and where she comes from. In terms of the party itself, what are your reflections? And we know that hindsight is a perfect science, of why it is that your party, the DA, didn't do better in the last general election, given the horrible, horrible gift of a massively underperforming ANC government.
Yes, you're absolutely right about hindsight. But I do think that, in fact, many people in the party saw parts of these issues coming long before the elections came. And I think that it's a consequence of the way that perhaps the party is structured, that a lot of those views couldn't always permeate up to the top. And I think that that's something we really have to change. We need to have a more collaborative structure in terms of understanding what's happening in the ground, rather than perhaps being led sometimes by leadership that is making decisions at the top that isn't always something that really is relevant to every single situation at the bottom. So I think with things like some of our messages in the last election, we had too many. People didn't understand some of it. We were very academic and jargon filled. But I think that these matters were raised by many members of the party, and it's been a good learning lesson for us. I think in this crisis, we've definitely learned that we need to do things differently going forward. And that's certainly one of the things that I'm running and talking about as a leader candidate.
Can we be a little bit more precise? When you talk about academic language and that kind of thing, right? It sounds to me that if I could simplified, that speaks to messaging or even the use quite literally of language. What do you say when you go on TV, radio, a town hall debate, or when you knock at someone's house? Is that really the sum total of the DA's problems in the last election? Because to say that is almost to say, oh my God, we had like amazeballs ideas, UCBS, if only we used the right language.
No, it's definitely not the sum total. I think that obviously policy confusion and the speaking out of certain leaders around different policy issues caused a lot of damage to the party, because it just gave an impression that we didn't really know where we stood as a party. I think that that was a huge issue in this last election. And then, of course, the internal infighting that we had, I think, obviously played out a lot in the public seen and people saw it, and nobody wants to follow a party that looks like it's tearing itself apart. And I think a lot of the ways that we handle some of the disciplinary processes, some of the exits of certain members could have been done in a way that didn't cause such damage to the party. I think that those three have been big factors in how we ended up where we are today. But I also think just as a party, we needed to look at not just the messaging, but are we saying things that actually matter to people? And I think that we definitely try to as a DA, but perhaps it's time for us to look at, have all our messages really resonated with South Africans? And if they haven't, why? Is it because they don't trust us? Is it because we're not speaking to them where they want to accept the messages? And are we just telling them rather than listening to them and really engaging them? And I think that those are real conversations that the party needs to have. I want to lead those conversations because I do think that we're missing the mark, because we do have so many great people in the DA that work really hard. And I think that if South Africans could see that, they'd understand that most of us are really invested in getting this country to work. But that's not what you see. You see some very big personalities. And I think this personality cult sort of thing that we've adopted is not great, where you sort of have one leader that seems to represent everything about the DA. I think it would be far better if people could see the dearth of leadership that we had, and we use the party's machinery to really bring up our local personalities and leaders. But that would also help to soften the blow of some of the utterances sometimes of people, to show that there are a myriad of different opinions.
Some people might say the opposite, right? And we'll move on from the diagnostic stuff in a second. So just one or two more minutes on looking back over our shoulders. Some people would say, yeah, there are one or two big personalities that dominated the election campaign in terms of visibility for the DA. But that, in a sense, you didn't have enough certainty at the top in terms of the leadership actually communicating anything clearly. That the problem wasn't so much that you used academic or difficult to understand language, but that there was a problem that is adjacent to that. There was a lack of clarity. So as a voter, particularly as an analyst who takes an interest in opposition politics, I struggle to be able to explain simply to a political animal whose job it is not to pay as close attention to your party as I do, what the DA's policy position is on, let's say, inequality. Poverty alleviation. For a party that often thinks that it has more brainy people than the ANC and the EFF, why is it so hard for you guys to have policy clarity? Even if the policies are right-wing. For me, to even say the DA is right-wing, which is how some people respond to you, is to give you more credit than you deserve. I think there's a more simple problem and a more embarrassing problem. Complete lack of policy clarity.
And that's why it's so crucial that we go to this policy conference, which we haven't had for many years, to actually decide where we stand on certain matters, what we're actually saying, who we're fighting for, and to get that clarity, as you say, because as I said before, definitely that was one of the things that I think confused voters. And obviously also us not leading really with our offer and our really great story. I mean, we do really well in municipalities where we govern and in our province. And I think that actually what voters want to hear is how we make things work. And we need to just really simplify that message and lead with that more, because we do have a lot of clarity around that. But I think sometimes the temptation is to talk about a lot of different things. And sometimes we haven't clarified for ourselves as a party because we haven't had enough policy conferences to cement where we stand on that. But I think it's something that is being addressed, and certainly in April we'll have more clarity after our policy conference.
Okay, 16 minutes after 10 o'clock, you are listening to the familiar voice of Mbali Ntuli, who hopes to become the next leader of the Democratic Alliance. The question is, does she have what it takes? What questions have you got for her? She is obviously someone who's got lots of experience in the party, but she still encounters a lot of stereotypes hurled her way. And I want to explore some of those as well, including around her age, which must be very irritating, I would imagine. But be that as it may, what is top of mind for you? When I say Mbali Ntuli, what comes up for you? Do you recognize her name? What questions would you ask of her? And what do you need to see in a DA leader before you might vote for the party, if you don't currently do so? Give us a call on 011-883-0702 and be part of the conversation.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 for the curious.
Mbali, let's talk a little bit about you. We're going to come back to some of the core political issues and the differences between you and other candidates in a second. You grew up in KwaZulu-Natal. Whereabouts?
In a lot of different places. So my family started off in Dzuma, which is a township in Durban. But at the same time, we would move between Emaphumulo and Nkandla, which are rural areas in KZN, where my homesteads are. And then Grantville and eventually Durban North, which is where I've spent the majority of my time living in KZN, which is very interesting because we still have all those homes and still I'm still got a lot of family there and I still visit. And obviously I'm like many people in my generation who has rural homesteads, has lived in the township, but also out of luck of the parents has also been able to live in suburbia and see that side of life too.
Tell me a bit about your parents. You know, very often over the years, as you made your way into politics as a youngster in the youth formation, becoming more experienced, a lot of profiles of you have been written over the years. And disproportionately, if not almost exclusively, when they do reference your parents and your family, it's always dad, and dad is in the taxi industry, was a founding member of a taxi association. Mom doesn't make an appearance. Siblings don't make an appearance. Just hit the pause button for me a little bit and give us a sense of your family and your family life.
My family is very interesting. I mean, my mom and dad both were from very rural areas in KZN. My dad only had a grade 4 education, but was one of those people, I suppose, that was very industrious and helped to start the KZN Taxi Association. He codified it. He made it quite honorable. He made sure that widows of people that would die through taxi violence would always have some money to send their kids. He made sure that routes would pass down generationally to create generational wealth. And as a result, even I can still, and have done so, taken on some of my father's roots. So I'll always have an income because of what he started, and there are many people like me. My mom, also a very difficult childhood, very, very poor, very industrious as well, would sell oranges to make sure that she could have money to go to extra school things. Eventually got enough money to take herself to a school in the township of Umlazi, became a teacher, and in her own way was actually a better businesswoman than my dad in the things that she did. And she is definitely credited by many people helping him to build up his empire at the time. So a very interesting family, but one that also, I think, for me, was very rooted in giving back to the community. So my dad would build cottages for teachers in different places. I still today get people who come up to me to say my dad helped put them or someone in their family through university. My mom was very involved in a lot of different women things. And obviously when a lot of the ANC leaders came back after, you know, unbanning and everything, my parents helped a lot of them to get some money or to get some places to stay because they hadn't had that opportunity for a while. So very, very interesting dynamics, but also quite liberal in many of the ways that they raised my brother and I. My dad was very fierce in terms of feminism, but also at the same time has some polygamy that he was doing, which was interesting because to him it didn't seem like a contradiction. But yeah, that's quite another day. But certainly in the
I'm
way
I'm chuckling just for your description of some polygamy
nyana. I mean, he was a wealthy man at that time. I mean, yeah, very interesting that I've had siblings that I've met over the years that weren't always known.
That's a very black story, right?
It is. It's incredibly
siblings
black.
At a funeral.
Siblings on Facebook that I've met,
really?
Yeah, that have tracked me down and that I've met, and it's been very interesting, and they definitely are my siblings. So
KwaZulu-Natal doesn't get, I think, in terms of our appreciation of South Africa's political narrative and the struggle against apartheid, and even after 94, we I don't think in the national discourse, if you see Jersey almost as a geographical sort of center of the country, that it often gets its due in terms of where we place it discursively. It's a province where a lot has happened. I mean, I've been reading, the last book I was reading was about Mo Sheikh and the ANC Spy Bible, it's called, and so much activity that happened there. When it comes to the taxi industry as well, so much violence, so much opportunity there as well. How was your family and the business and dad's life and your early memory of business? What memories do you have, particularly given the sort of violent structure that is often enmeshed with the taxi industry?
It was definitely certainly violent. And I suppose I've seen so much of it that to some degree I just took it as a, you know, a matter of life. That particular kind of violence, the taxi violence, people were always getting shot. My dad got shot. People had bodyguards. We had bodyguards even after my dad had died. I had family members try to kill me and my mom and my brother after my father had died to try and take over the empire. One of the shootings happened outside of my junior school. Others happened inside of our house, and my mom had to flee and run into a restaurant across the road. Luckily, we had just left, but the gunman shot into our beds where we were. So if we had been there, we definitely would have died because he was using a shotgun. So definitely lots of violence, police catching people outside our house with boots full of ammunition.
How has that shaped you as a politician? I mean, you're still relatively young, but despite that, to have memory of that level of violence, including quite literally assassination attempts, even involving gogo, potential poisoning, that is a hell of a lot for any person to endure from a psychological point of view.
And I think this is where my mom needs to get her due. She made sure that we were so well adjusted, took us to therapy, really talked to us a lot. But also what it did was it made us a very tight unit of just three people. And I grew up with not much family around, actually, because we didn't really know who to trust. And that makes you, I think, very self-reliant. I'm very tough. I don't scare easily on a lot of things. And I mean, I come from very tough stock, I guess. And I saw it physically in my life. And a lot of the times when I feel scared or not sure about things, I just remember that my parents, were kind of badasses and that I had no, you know, no choice but to try and do things that I think are right and to be brave about it. So it's definitely a part of me. And I think it talks to a lot of the grits that I have. But it also for me has made me very sensitive to a lot of people's, lives, because when I couldn't have a family, I was really interested in what other human beings were doing. So I'm deeply interested in humans and their life stories and what kind of journeys they've had, because nobody ever expects me to talk about this kind of stuff. So I'm always interested in what has happened to a lot of other people. And I think for me, a lot of that is also why I'm in politics, is how do you sort of gauge where people are and how do you help them navigate that?
So talk to me about then specifically the Democratic Alliance and what it is about this party that firstly attracted you to it, and now why you would want to lead it. People wrongly and lazily simply assume that if someone is 31 years old or almost 31 years old, you and I have the
almost
same.
Almost 32, actually.
Yeah, actually, yeah, we have the, that means that they obviously are inexperienced. Mm. But you have, since 2008, when you graduated through the DA's youth program, you've been inside the party. That is a good 10 plus years of experience inside the party. But we live in such an ageist world. Someone can be in your party for 5 years, but because they are 40 or 50, the assumption is that they are more experienced as a politician. What drew you to the DA specifically, and why do you think you should be leader of the DA?
Sure. So two things drew me to the DA. When I was 8 and after my dad died, we slaughtered a cow in the suburbs. One of the cows went out of our yard and scared a lot of white people in Durban North. So that became a huge controversial issue. The DP leader at the time, Roger Burrows, came to see my mom and to ask her, yo, what's going on here? Like, what's happening? And he really took such a great interest in understanding Zulu tradition and customs. And for me, he chose just somebody who was really respectful of others' rights. And I'm pretty sure he didn't know much about Zulu traditions, but I was deeply struck by somebody who was trying to reach across. And he was a great, I think, conduit between us and the community, to just exist peacefully and to understand that. And it also helped to shape some of the bylaws, in KZN around traditional ceremonies. So that was my first, impression of the DA, and it was in my formative years. And my mom always would talk about, you know, DA people checking in, or DP people at the time checking in. And I thought, what a nice thing. And I was really interested in politics anyway. Mm. And then in matric, when I was just about to go to varsity, my mom gave me a book, which was Karl Popper's, Open Society and Its Enemies. And it just so happened that at the time, the DA was also launching its Open Opportunity Society for All documents. And I, as a liberal, sort of thought that this was a vehicle for me that seemed that it would actually try to better South Africans. And I went to the other political parties, the ANC and the IFP, And they didn't take me seriously about actually wanting to join and be a part of it. And the DA, from me being on campus and really engaging people there and wanting to start branches to help students, was the only party at the time that took a young person seriously. So for me, it spoke quite highly of a party and the potential that it could have for South Africa. So that's why I'm here. And I think getting to know the people in the DA, I think we do a disservice to ourselves as the party to not amplify some of those people a lot more, who I think would resonate with South Africans.
But becoming leader is almost like a poison chalice, right? There's both an opportunity, because really the party ought to be doing better. I honestly, I know it's easier said than done as a mere commentator and as a talk show host. I can't see how the party didn't get at least 30% of the national election given the Jacob Zuma years. Mm. So there's an opportunity there. And yet at the same time, your party is much maligned. For better or worse, there is a list of pejorative words that come to mind for many people, including ones who aren't in love with the ANC, when they hear Democratic Alliance. And even people who love you as an individual politician. Here's a typical one on Twitter. Mahema says, "I love Mbali, Mara, why DA?" Right? And so how do you see that challenge, that a lot of people like you as an individual? If we had a constituency-based system, many people would vote for you in a constituency. You'd be returned over and over again back into parliament as an independent. Why do you want to lead a DA that is such a divided and a very complex brand?
Well, I think, firstly, the DA is still a vehicle that I think can, at least because we've got the machinery and the people, work towards helping to fix South Africa. I think we've got a lot of issues that we need to sort out. And I think that if we're willing to try and look at politics in a new way, in a way where we aren't trying to base it on personality or the archetype of the politician that we've seen, and really take this opportunity and this crisis that we find ourselves in to go a different way, to maybe, you know, elect a leader that isn't somebody who typically tries to act like a statesman the whole time, but is actually real and can talk to people and is approachable and can be vulnerable, I think it would resonate with South Africans more. And then you use that to then start talking about the real issues that we have, because I think a part of the problem is that people don't trust us, so they don't hear what we say. And I've been saying this in my party, until we can get to a level where people believe that our leaders are people like them, ordinary people that they can relate to, they're not going to believe everything, because we do have a past or a perception of a past that people seem to really struggle with. But a lot of people in my party are liked as individuals. And so I think we need to be bringing a lot of that more. And I want to lead the DA because I really think that there's still a great opportunity for us to reach across the table, even to other political parties, to really try and become an alternative government at some stage, even if we start up municipalities. But I think South Africa deserves better than we've got now. And I think if I could win, it could show that other ordinary people could run in, or come into politics, run and have the potential to take over. Young women who typically don't want to be involved because they want to start families or whatever the case is, and it's not a great environment. People who are on the sidelines thinking, I've got something to contribute, I've got something to say, but I don't want to be in the rough and tumble of it. If they can see that a 32-year-old can do it, it might inspire them to do it, and it might inspire them to come on board and actually help build this kind of project. I don't know if that's possible right now, if we're going to continue sort of with the language and the trajectory that we've said, because I think that people have already shown us that they're not interested in the DA in that way. But if we could come up with something different, and I think I could really lead the party in that sense, then I really think that we could get people.
I want to take the news headlines. I want to ask you this question, and it's an awkward one, but I have to ask it, and I'll give you a couple of minutes to think about it. Competitive advertising is unlawful in South Africa, but not competitive politics, including leadership positions. You keep answering the question of why you want to lead the DA by referring to the potential of the DA as a party. I want to know, what traits have you got as Mbali Ntuli that John and John do not have, that makes you a unique selling point and should pip you to the post as an individual?
Listening. What do you have to say?
24 minutes before 11 o'clock, time flies when you have fascinating guests, and I have another one. I was hanging out with John Robbie earlier. That was Nostalgic Radio. This hour, I'm hanging out with Mbali Ntuli, who is one of three folks hoping to become the leader of the Democratic Alliance, the next full-time leader of the official opposition. Mbali, I'd ask you a necessary awkward question. The question isn't only, what can the DA yet be? The question is, why you? There are other folks who are running for this position. If I think about John Steenhuisen, for example, if I was spinning for John, there are many things in his favor. One of them, for example, is his level of visibility. For some people, you had recognizability much more before you retreat, they would say, back to KZN, where you've been doing some really good work. But your national profile isn't the same. If you go to, I don't know, Kunu or Oudtshoorn, people might not even recognize you. And the other thing is that we see the man doing very good work in parliament, authoritative, etc. So what are the things that mark you out as someone worthy of being the leader? Because the leadership race is one relative to other contestants.
So I think, obviously, I think all the leaders that are running have great traits and great strengths. I think what I bring to the table in particular is, one, really having grown the party more than the other two leaders in places where the DA typically hasn't been. And I'm talking about rural areas like Mkhanyawute, where I arrived with absolutely nobody around and managed to, in five municipalities, grow the most amount of activists for the DA in KZN. And also was able to get councillors elected into every one of those districts, which actually helped the party, because then we held, the kingmaker role in two of those municipalities to get the IFP on board in Tshwane and in Johannesburg. So I'm very proud of that. The same thing has happened in Duzuma, in Bambaya, which is an informal settlement, and in many places where the DA typically wasn't. And I think if the DA already wants to grow, it's going to need somebody who can speak in those communities, authentically communicate with people, and really get them to trust that the DA is going to be able to help them. I've gotten that track record, and I've been in the party for 12 years. I've been a councillor. I'm a second term MPL, and I chose to be in KZN because I precisely wanted to be able to do a lot of constituency work, which sometimes when you're in parliament, you don't always get to do because you're in parliament so much. Obviously, that also comes with being able to do legislative work, and I'm very proud of the legislative work that I've done around sex offenders in KZN and schools in particular. Amongst others, like COCTA, I've just put through some submissions for the traditional bills. So I've got the experience, I think, of being on the ground consistently more than I think the other two candidates of late. And also definitely of being in places where the DA hasn't typically been for me. I think that that's important. But I also think that I'm able to connect to a lot of other South Africans because I've also had a different type of life. And I think that that one is able to speak to South Africans who maybe are young and aren't particularly checking into politics, not because they're apathetic, but because they don't see a political party that speaks to them. I think I speak their language more authentically. And again, if the DA really wants to grow, it has to look at welcoming a new pool of people.
That's really interesting. And it's a bit of a maths game, though, isn't it? I mean, sorry to interrupt you there, but it's a really fascinating and interesting particular point of difference, right? So you are much younger compared to the other two candidates. Do you think that's an advantage or disadvantage? I hear you that when you have a youth demographic dividend that hasn't been properly leveraged in this country socially, politically, and economically, that there's a sense in which, not a sense in which, a reality in which John and Eusebius even do not resonate with younger South Africans as much as you can, just as a matter of social fact. On the other hand, I can also imagine many of the voting delegates who are more important than the voters in a national election going, Bali sounds amazing, Eusebius, but like, can't you just wait like 5 or 10 years?
Well, I'm always interested with that argument because it's been leveled at me, but many male leaders in my party have been leading since they were in their early 20s. John was a leader when he was in 20. Anthony Bernardi, who was a leader in Mpumalanga, was 27. So I think that the barometer, particularly for women, is always one that's higher. And I'd be interested to know which age I would be more suitable for, because I'm showing that I've got experience, I've got passion, and I want to grow this party, and I genuinely believe that I can do it. And obviously, I'm the kind of leader who would have a whole team behind them of people with different types of experiences, whether age or in different markets to the ones that I'm able to reach. So I think that's what you need in a leader.
Do you think when people ask you about your age, it's a dishonest question, that it's racialized or gendered, and that there's other stuff going on there beyond a sincere worry about experience?
I think so. And I don't think it's always intentional or with malice. I think it's just something that society has. But I mean, also looking at, you know, places like Finland and New Zealand. Here we have countries that have had women leaders now being the prime ministers, the whole cabinets. And it seems that the world is just moving a step faster than us in this particular sense. And to me, it's weird because South Africa is such a young country. We should be wanting people that want to do politics in a new way rather than having people that have done it the same way and expect different answers.
Okay, now as a normative argument, I agree with you. When those delegates are all sitting, let's imagine, I don't know, hypothetically, we arranged a town hall debate and the main people in the town hall were the voting members who will go to Congress. How would you try and convince them? What would you say to them? In relation to the age question.
Well, I'm going to say to them, it's really going to come down to what they think South Africans would vote for. Because at the end of the day, it's not really only just about whether they like me or John Moody. It's going to be when we go out to South Africa and we present, this is our leader, this is what they're saying, who do they think is going to stand the best chance of getting more South Africans excited about the Democratic Alliance? And for me, that's the higher goal or the higher picture that we need to look at. Who will people vote for in South Africa to really get the DA growing again?
I think that is one of the most fascinating strategic questions that your delegates will have to grapple with. And it's really, really interesting, right? And I mean, you can answer this question or not, because I don't know what your campaigning strategy is. But as I'm watching what's going on in America at the moment, there's this classic thing that happens with every presidential election where candidates who want to eventually become the candidate for the Democratic Party or the Republican Party have got to make a choice. When we are trying to become the candidate for our party, do we run a campaign that appeals to the party faithful and then change tack in the main race and then appeal to the center and to a broader base? For example, you might appeal to liberals when you want to become the Democratic Party candidates. But then, you know, don't forget about the Bible Belt when you are trying to become president of the country. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me what you have done, which is an interesting tactical choice since you've announced that you are running, is that you've been quite brave to tell your fellow DA peers that a key question in this leadership race should be, who is the most electable in a national election?
Yes.
Discuss. Isn't that a risk to say that?
I mean, definitely, but I want to be honest. And I mean, I think internally, there's not much more that I can say to show that I've got the experience and that I can do the job. And I mean, I've run, you know, provincial campaigns for provinces, like my province in KZN, and we actually grew. So I don't know how much more I can speak to really the experience question, because it's something that all three of us, I think, have in different ways. Mm. But what I think is more important is, are we trying to be a party that's stabilizing and staying the same and just trying to stay the course of being, you know, opposition that's punching above its weight? Or are we trying to be a party that can actually try and get more South Africans to vote for it? Because we need to win. We need power. And we need to actually increase and show that we're still growing. And for me, that's more important, because I want us to get into government. I want us to do the great things that we're able to do in other municipalities and provinces that we govern. And for me, I think delegates need to look at that very carefully. And it's not to downplay the traits of the other candidates, but that's what I'm saying. I think I stand above them in terms of.
Before we take our next break, let's talk about the elephant in this little dialectic between us. Do you think that the skin color of the leader matters?
I don't think it matters, but I do think that the society that we live in and the voters that are outside of the internal DA contestation, for them, it's something that seems to still matter. And I think, again, if you could have a leader that could be authentic, I mean, when Helen Zille was the leader of the DA, she grew the DA and people really bought into her, people of all races. So I think it matters that you're authentic and you seem to genuinely care for people. But I'm not naive to the fact that many, many South Africans still operate under the fact that they want to vote for somebody that looks like them. But that would not be something that would be central to the way that I think we should contest internally, because a big part of what we need to be doing in this country is making sure that everyone feels they belong, everyone feels they have a fair chance at being able to lead a party if they want to. And that's what I honestly think, but I'm also alive to the realities of the society that we operate in.
So what does that mean in practice, that an extremely competent black candidate is preferable to an extremely competent white candidate?
No, I don't think so. I think people will have to make that choice on whatever criteria they decide to vote on, or to be the tiebreaker between those two people. But what I am saying is, I'm not sure that our country, by and large, always looks at that. And I mean, when I was on Okozie this morning, all the questions that I was asked was around race and whether I'm afraid that the DA might be using me, or am I not scared as a black person in the DA? And a lot of those, again, weren't about malice, but you can just see how much race still plays into the dialogue of our country. So for some people, it still really matters.
Okay, let's take a break there. Very interestingly skirted, well handled, 13 minutes before 11. You want to squeeze in a question directly yourself, Mbali Ntuli, 011-883-0702.
Tell us what you want. We're listening. Hashtag 702 listens.
11 minutes before 11 o'clock. Mbali Ntuli, put on your headphones for me. We've got Bra Willie on the line. Willie, quick to the point, comment or question.
Good morning. Good morning, Isovias, and I extend my greetings to your guest today in the studio.
Hi.
And I would like to say to her, oh, Yina! But now, right, let me get to the English part of the story. You know, first and foremost, I would like to say I really compliment the bravery of Mbali. Mbali, I'm not DA, by the way. I'm 101% EFF. But I would like to say to you, I want you to first understand me. And I'm 75 years old. And I would like to say, I compliment you, Mdanam, for what way, the stand you have taken.
Yeah,
we
mom.
Do really need young people. We need women leadership. You remind me of years gone by. The very same DA which today you as a young person you are seeing, it takes me back to years when they broke away from the so-called a party that was existing in those years, and they formed the Progressive Party, led by a woman who Helen Suzman, and she took it to great heights as the one and only lone voice speaking for black people in that parliament of Cape Town. And fast forward to where we are today, just 30 seconds, then I get off. Fast forward to where we are today, you are getting some DA people who want to take the party again back to Osewa Brandwach type of politics, and this is not on. I appreciate your dynamics of saying there are realities in South Africa that people need to face, and those realities concern the 40 million plus South Africans.
Okay, thanks, Willie. He's EFF, but he likes you, but obviously he doesn't like the vehicle that you're a part of. How are you going to deal with that kind of South African that says, I really love you, I wish you were in my vehicle?
Well, I think we need to be honest and say that not every single party is going to get every single person. And if you try to do that, you're going to fall short because you're going to try to be all things to everyone. I think there's definitely space for the DA to reach across to a lot more South Africans in the way that we do things. But we're not going to win anyone. And it's not going to be my mission to try and convert people that are EFF, because I think we probably have a very different view on the world. But I respect people who are still checked into the political system, and there's no need for us not to be able on some things, perhaps.
But you do need to grow the party, right? Because here's my problem with some DA politicians. Sometimes when you have a Willie calling to a radio station, it is analytically convenient to box him as someone who was impossible to ever convince, rather than to ask yourself, why am I not appealing to this particular person? I totally agree with you. No party anywhere in the world will ever get 100% share of the electorate, right? But there are many DA politicians who conveniently in their post-mortems like to write off the critics as, ah, these are people who never were going to vote for us anyway.
Yeah. I think that that is a mistake. I think that there are a lot of people that we could be reaching. And there's a whole pool of people that just are not in the political system because they feel like they have no political home. And we really need to try and understand that market. I don't have the answers of exactly what it is that they'd be looking for, but I think that authenticity and policies and things that really speak to them really could be the way that we could start trying at the very least to engage them.
And Corsi wants to know, what is your view on black economic empowerment?
So this has been the noose around the parties Nick, I think, for the last year or so, because we've had so many leaders pronounce their own opinions and views and then really cause unnecessary tension. As it stands, the DA has in its policy suite race-based policies, but we have had leaders, I think, who have wrongly given their opinions about things which have then caused tension in the party. So for me, when I go to this policy conference, what I'm going to talk about is, let's be honest, Black, Indian and colored people were thrown into deep holes by apartheid, and many of them are still there. At the same time, because our state has failed, the intentions behind BEE and affirmative action, which were good in the main, have been distorted and don't work. And so now people definitely have animosity towards those policies. And because our economy is not growing, I can also understand many white people who also feel that now they are not able to have security or security for their kids. And I think there's nothing wrong with the DA talking about how this has become the problem around race. But I think it's a red herring in terms of the race-based policies. I think the problem is because nobody feels that they have a chance or a fair chance to get a job in this country, it's because of race-based policies. Personally, when I go to that conference, I'm going to say whatever we decide as a party, whether it's race-based or poverty-based or disadvantage-based, it must be things that are fair, things that speak to the realities of South Africa, and things that we can implement, preferably even in the Western Cape, where we can show how these policies would then be used to readdress anybody who was disadvantaged or living in poverty.
Do you support Black Economic Empowerment as Mbali?
I support the intentions behind it and what it tried to do for Black people. I think many Black people may not have been given the positions that they have now if it hadn't been for these policies. And I think it's dishonest to, or disingenuous for people to say that they would have been given them on merit in any case, because if that had been the case, we wouldn't have needed them. But I do think that they have failed in many ways to be implemented in the ways that they were supposed to. And we are a dynamic country that can come up with many other ways that we can still readdress the imbalances of the past.
What stops you from saying yes without being so wordy?
Because I don't think that I should be making that pronouncement on behalf of the party. I think it's something that we need to take a decision as a broader structure. And I'm interested in hearing what other people's views are. But like I say, I understand their
intention. So on a process point, does your party bar you, all of you as leaders for that matter? I'm genuinely interested, because this also tells us something about your party's political culture. Does it bar you from expressing an individual view on a public platform?
I think that when the party has positions, we obviously have to speak to those positions. You can give your personal opinion on some things, but I think this particular issue is one that is quite explosive at the moment, and I don't want to be taken out of context. I think I'll have a chance, certainly at the policy conference, to expand on my views without being misquoted, which is very possible, particularly because I'm in a leadership race at the moment.
But that's the opportunity to demonstrate what you stand for, right? And regardless of consequence. Here's why, Mbali, and I've known you for a long time, and I would even go so far as to say I've got enormous generosity towards you, but there is a problem in how you're handling the race question, and it's not me saying this. Yes, here are young Black people, who are the people that you think that you appeal to more than John and John, responding to how you handle the question of race a little bit earlier and now this one. And I'm just reading the tweets. Zintel says, does that mean that race doesn't matter to you, Mbali? Ndia Kuva Usiti, you can see that race matters to the rest of us, and I would like to think that you're not so removed that you wouldn't be able to see why it matters. I know what she means by that, because you were saying, well, race doesn't matter, but it matters to the rest of the country. I let you off there, but I don't have to go in, because the average listener who's listening even half critically, they hear in that a refusal for you to place yourself in the rest of South Africa that also experiences the country in a racialized manner.
I mean, of course, race matters. And I mean, I'm a Black person. I understand that very well and very fundamentally. All I'm saying is that for the party to take this decision, it can't be about what I solely think. And that's why I have to go to the policy position with the potential to say, this is what I think South Africans think, and this is what we should consider. But if I say now that this is the one way that we should be, people will be turned off, I think, to me presenting arguments in the policy position. But I think nobody can deny that race matters in South Africa. We still see it everywhere. It's still a very much a factor of our country. And you see it in many of the debates that we're having, even around social cohesion issues. And I think I've been very clear on many of those instances where I stand and why race still matters. But I think that there is a difference between then pronouncing something as though I'm not a leader who's going to be able to take other people's considerations into account. And that's why I want us to go to this policy conference and be very real. And I'm going to present to the policy conference that in terms of South Africans, race and the fact that they believe that it's still a fundamental part of whether they can succeed or not in South Africa is still a very big reality.
Barbara, our last caller, very quickly. Thank you so much for your patience. What did you want to say?
Firstly, it's a pleasure, and what a wonderful young lady. She's got my vote.
Yay.
I'm very fond of John Steenhuisen. He's an articulate, good politician. But this young lady is going to take the DA further, and congratulations. I think you're wonderful.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay, on that very positive note, Mbali, thank you so much. I know you went to great lengths to honor this interview. I do appreciate it, as the John Moody, and I'm pretty sure John Steenhuisen will do the same. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in this leadership contest in your party. Thanks for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me.